T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
Welcome to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Today I'm going to talk about a eyes-only study that was done on UFOs for President Lyndon Johnson. We're waiting now for a report from the UAP Task Force, and people are all excited. There's going to be something revealed, disclosure. What does the government really know? The report I'm going to reference, and I'm going to read the entire thing, comes from the 1960s. I don't think anything has really changed, or very little has changed in terms of what they found then and what they find now. There's nothing that's going to be classified. I'm going to reveal everything. I'm going to put it out. Give you the background of how this occurred. Because I'd done the presidential stuff, I received an email from a woman who was in contact with the daughter of Frank Rand. Now, Frank Rand was an advisor to, an assistant to the President of the United States, to Lyndon Johnson. And Frank Rand put together a study. What had happened, according to the documents I've seen, is that James McDonald was pushing hard to get a UFO investigation done during the 1960s. He was a professor at the University of Arizona, and was very famous for his UFO research, has huge sets of files I've seen a couple of times. He had correspondence with the president about the SST, the supersonic transport, and also was pushing the president for an investigation into UFOs. So Johnson got upset and handed this off to Frank Rand to do this investigation. Now, the people in the ATIP program, I believe, are not the guy that's running it is not going to be all that high level in terms of the people. Because one of the complaints people are going to have about this report that I'm going to read is, well, this is a big deal now. This was not a big deal back in the 1960s. So let me start by actually detailing for you who was on this committee and show you that the people on the committee in the 1960s were much higher, much more powerful than the people that are dealing with this UAP task force, unless I'm not clued in as to what's going on. Here are the members of the committee. This, they called it our special team. This is put together by Frank Wright, Frank Rand. And the first one is General James T. Stewart. He was from the University of Michigan. He was a four-star general. Now, Tom DeLong, you'll see, of course, a parallel between this team and the team that was assembled for Tom DeLong starting in 2015. Tom DeLong had a two-star general from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. This 1960s investigation had General Stewart, who was a four-star general. So that's the first person. That's one of the eight people. The other people that were on the committee included this man, Dr. Brockway McMillan. He was Undersecretary for the Air Force and also a director of the National Reconnaissance Organization. Now, that agency didn't identify itself until the 1990s. He was the third director of the National Reconnaissance Organization. Dr. Brockway McMillan was one of the eight people on this investigation team that was looking into UFOs for the President of the United States. Very high-level material. He had worked on military research for Bell Labs for a number of years. He was on the panel that determined what kind of military research. The other one that was on here is Arthur Lundahl. Now, I've always stated there were three guys who run the UFO Weird Desk at the CIA. Now it's supposedly Ron Pandolfi. Before that was Kit Green. Before that was Arthur Lundahl. Now, Arthur Lundahl is a very, very powerful figure. He was the guy who analyzed all the UFO photographs for the Robertson Panel Report in the 1950s. He ran a Navy lab. He was then moved to the CIA after that stint with the Robertson Panel, and he was given a lab, and he became the director of the National Photographic Interpretation Center, which was a very high secret lab from the CIA. It was in the slums of Washington, D.C. And what they did there was they analyzed all the SR-71, all the U-2, and all the satellite photographs. He ran this this very top secret lab for the Central Intelligence Agency. He was also very well known that he was very much into UFOs. He had dealt with James McDonald, Jacques Vallée. If you read Jacques Vallée's Forbidden Science books, you'll see that Jacques Vallée had a number of conversations with Arthur Lundahl. Arthur Lundahl told one researcher back in the 1980s that he had briefed three presidents on the subject of UFOs. So Arthur Lundahl was one of the people on this committee. And what you'll see is a crossover there that this committee used Arthur Lundahl, and the Tom DeLonge team was using Jim Semivan. So they had a crossover there as well. Now, in the Tom DeLonge team had Robert Weiss, who was the chairman of Lockheed Skunk Works. And we've heard stories that, you know, if there's a back engineering program, it's in the industry end of the thing. It's not in the government. And of course, Lockheed Skunk Works is always rumored to be the number one company that's doing the back engineering. So Tom DeLonge had Robert Weiss on his board advising him. And then when the WikiLeaks dropped and they were all exposed, Robert Weiss had to sort of run for cover. Now, whether Robert Weiss is still helping this initiative that's going on now, this disclosure initiative, I'm not really sure. But the one that was on the 1960s was Kelly Johnson. So Kelly Johnson was before Ben Rich. He was the head of Lockheed Skunk Works. He's the developer of the U-2, the SR-71, the F-104 tactical aircraft fighter, and the stealth aircraft. So he, very major player. And one would say that if he was on the team and they were back engineering, well, then they would have the guy who was doing the back engineering of the flying saucers on the committee that was reporting on this eyes-only study for the President of the United States. Dr. Lee Brocking was renamed. He was a major physicist. They changed his name. I'm not sure who it was, but he was a physicist from a leading California university. So that was the only name that they changed. Then there's a nuclear physicist by the name of Dr. Bleakley from Princeton University that was on the committee. There was a Dr. Losh who was on the committee. He was an astronomer at the University of Michigan. And then there was Rand, who was the assistant to the President of the United States. So you see these very high-level people on this committee from the 1960s. And here's what was written about this committee and their access. This is Rand writing, and he writes this in a manuscript. So it's an eyes-only study, so the documents will not be around that the president actually saw. But Rand actually had the files, and he was doing a manuscript for to put out later, and he died before he was able to do it. And his daughter found this manuscript with all the notes and the stuff like that. And there was a friend of hers who's a UFO person who contacted me, and I have not the whole collection of this manuscript, but I have most of it. So here's what Rand writes in terms of the level of the team that they had. Quote, collectively, we believed we had access to all special programs and budgets, classified and unclassified in the United States, and we were cleared into the classified intelligence on the Russians, Chinese, etc. We believed We, therefore, could quickly sort out and eliminate all U.S. Air Force and foreign existing programs and developments from the UFO sightings, classified and unclassified. This would ultimately allow us to assemble a truly unclassified scientific UFO summary paper, just for the president. This quest proved to be a difficult task, since there were so many quacks and flying saucer nuts out there generating false information or false UFO witness sightings and photographs. Here, Arthur, and they're talking about Arthur Lundahl, with his worldwide archives on photographs, he was a photographic expert, and staff came in handy. His staff would critically evaluate these photographs we choose to help us rule out the fake UFO photographs. But it took too much time. So this report was done. It was handed into the president. And that will be the end of section one. And now I will read the conclusions to the study. It's a very long section. It's pages and pages and pages. I think there's about 43 or 44 points. Conclusions as to what they knew about UFOs in the 1960s. Okay, here's the summary of the report given to the President of the United States. It's called the President's Summary, Section 2, Summary Introduction. Mr. President, we have divided our report to you into two sections. Number one, the more complex but still brief report based on our nine-month investigation of UFOs with recommendations as you requested. A very brief summary taken from our more complex report written along the lines of my daily 7 a.m. report to you, perhaps a bit longer. Then they go into a little bit about where the sightings are coming from. The UFO sightings in our used in our investigation came from thousands on record, the collective files of the U.S. Air Force, NICAP, and others. Arthur Lundahl cross-checked the photographs for authenticity whenever possible within sensitive security restrictions. We eliminated all classified sightings of U.S. Air Force, USA, and foreign satellites, as well as all high-altitude, high-speed military aircraft from our report to the President. Now, here's the conclusions here. And this is fairly lengthy. Conclusions. Number one. There is abundant evidence that suggests unidentified flying objects, UFOs, or crafts are real. They have intelligence. They are often observed with highly reflective metal-looking outer skins. No system of scientific experiment are known to exist. This is hard because I have to read the... There's some handwriting they were doing. No system of scientific experiment are known to exist in the U.S. which covers and gives rise to such phenomena. Number two, at night they have been observed with high-intensity, multicolored lights beaming up as well as down towards the ground beneath the hovering UFOs. Some UFOs have been observed as they closed and have flown along with formations with both military and commercial aircraft. Some were observed while flying in close formation for extended periods by both military and civilian crews and the passengers aboard the aircraft. Number four, UFOs have been observed hovering at distances as close as 50 to 150 feet from the observers. While hovering, these close-up UFO sightings seemed to either be very quiet while others emitted a low audible hum, but nothing like the sound of jet engines or rockets. Number five, based on visual, multiple, simultaneous sightings from ground observations and from both commercial and private airline pilots while being viewed and recorded on multiple sensors, such as radar, optical viewing devices, and recorded on multiple photographic images. These UFOs have demonstrated the capability of hovering, abruptly changing course or direction and altitude, and have demonstrated the capability of traveling at excessive speeds of thousands of miles per hour. I included the following two photographs of saucer-type UFOs supplied by Dr. Hynek's current organization. These are typical of the photographs often taken by witnesses. I included these two since one was taken in Vancouver, Washington, and the second was taken in Scotland. When enhanced, they are surprisingly similar. We decided to draw the composites shown below that were configured based on interviews with many witnesses and the collection of Arthur Lundahl's photographs, since each photograph or witness often contributed small details not brought out in any single photograph. Then they include two daylight photographs of a sort of a classic metallic disc. Then the report produces diagrams, hand-drawn diagrams of crafts 20 to 40 feet high, 100 to 200 feet across, like mothership type things, and then smaller crafts 40 to 50 feet across, 10 to 20 feet, and shows the lights coming off and the on the small craft windows. So they included a diagram for the president, a hand-done diagram. Number 7. Both types of UFOs have been observed simultaneously from several directions by credible witnesses while hovering over or near objects of known size or against known backgrounds or fields, such as football fields, private houses, or barns, and multiple police cars that allow for good assessment of their size. The saucer types have also been observed flying in formation and even at excessive speeds in separate groups of 3 or 6. These formations have often been viewed and tracked simultaneously from both aircraft and ground observers. The larger cigar-shaped UFO has usually been observed hovering alone. Number 8. Some observers or witnesses have suggested UFOs are large spherical objects. It was our collection opinion that these spherical UFOs were not successfully observed from multiple views in 3 dimensions, suggesting that these sightings were of the saucer type of UFO when viewed from above or below. They only appeared to be spherical. We do not categorically state UFOs may not be spherical, only that the imaging data and formation from the main witnesses we reviewed did not support that thesis. Number 9. We could not conclude that they came from another planet in our solar system or from interstellar space. Nor could we conclude that they did not. With our team's collective clearances in the U.S. and Russian intelligence covering spacecraft, missiles, and high-speed, high-altitude aircraft developments, we quickly eliminated all such classified activity in the world. Over the many UFO sightings, we and Arthur Lundahl investigated. It is interesting to note that we still had credible UFO sightings left unexplained. To once again quote Dr. McDonald, perhaps UFOs are the greatest scientific problem of our times. I'll note here that Dr. McDonald was the one that was putting pressure on the White House to do this report. Number 10. Based on our analysis of the physics of the UFO phenomena, employing either controlled nuclear fission or nuclear fusion, discussed more fully in Section 1, for onboard control, power, and propulsion, we could not rule out the conjecture that they came from other planets in our solar system, or perhaps even from other places in interstellar space. But without an energy system like controlled nuclear fusion, or better, such travel would be impossible. Number 11. If they came from other planets or interstellar space over the years, they must have collected and stored vast amounts of information required for navigation and control and orbit transfer to and within our solar system's plane of the ecliptic. Number 12. These UFOs must have also developed a very sophisticated high-frequency communication system and computer system to control the spacecraft and propulsion systems required to navigate in three dimensions about our solar system or interstellar space, especially to establish orbit around our sun and then to establish orbit around the Earth. Based on the ever-increasing success of such programs as Apollo lunar landing and return, the NASA Space Shuttle, the very successful classified reconnaissance satellites developed by Russia, France, United States, and even China, it would seem, with very little stretch of one's imagination, that UFOs are technically feasible, especially with controlled nuclear fusion, for onboard UFO power, communication, control, and propulsion. Number 14. The ability to move about within our solar system, capture and orbit our planet, or hide in orbit among the rings of asteroids, planetoids, and many minor planets between Mars and the outer solar system consisting of Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, represents a feasible location for an orbiting space platform from which these observed UFOs could easily descend to Earth's surface and then return to their hidden orbiting space station among the planetoids outside of Mars orbit. Number 15. It is also interesting to note that there are upwards of 40,000 sizable objects such as asteroids, planetoids, in this constantly changing ring that could easily provide an undetectable location for UFO operating base or space station in our solar system. Small asteroids are captured by the sun's gravity and added to this ring of planets. Others speed by and continue on their way, escaping the Earth's gravitational pull. This constantly changing scene and location around our sun offers a feasible location for a UFO space station, like many planetoids, would probably never be located or identified with current telescopes, radar, or infrared sensors here on Earth. Employing the relatively recent orbiting Hubble Space Telescope to intermittently look for UFOs may prove most interesting. Reviewing the orbit mechanisms and movement about in the plane of the sun's ecliptic, such UFO operations would appear entirely feasible, according to our noted and lovable astronomer, Dr. Losh, now deceased. Number 17. The fact that Earth is one of the smallest planets in our solar system, and consequently with very relatively weak gravitational potential, accompanied by a very thin atmosphere, would further suggest that the Earth offers a good planet for UFO operations. It is easy to orbit the Earth outside of our thin atmosphere at altitudes of 200 to 500 miles. At those altitudes, the orbiting vehicle experiences little drag and will stay in orbit with only a small added energy blast to hold the velocity in orbit. These orbiting UFOs could then elect to descend to the Earth at any time or place of their choosing. Number 18. Fission of the heavier uranium and plutonium, especially with the need for tons of mined Earth raw material to secure enough pure 235 or 239 for fusion reactions to proceed, would suggest that fusion offers potential for UFO power or propulsion. Number 19, the fact that the Earth, known as the water planet, has very abundant supplies of hydrogen in the isotope form deuterium, naturally available for controlled fusion and therefore convertible for UFO onboard power, control, communication, and propulsion systems, suggests why they might wish to visit the Earth and borrow a cup of hydrogen. Number 20. Our investigation of fusion reactions suggested that the controlled fusion with hydrogen deuterium, so easily collected from our oceans, might have great appeal for visiting UFOs. The combination of controlled nuclear fusion coupled with some workable form of electric or magnetic field of containment would appear to be scientifically and practically feasible when employed by the postulated UFO visitors for onboard power and propulsion. Number 21. It's interesting to observe that the total amount of hydrogen in the form of deuterium naturally available in the oceans of the Earth is estimated to be approximately 4.5 times 10 to the 19th grams. Its fusion energy content would be roughly 3 times 10 to the 20th kilowatt years. Number 22. At the world's current yearly rate of electric power consumption, these estimated deuterium reserves in the world's oceans alone, if used for the Earth's electric power, would last for billions of years. Perhaps these UFOs know something we have yet to learn concerning controlled fusion, nuclear fusion reactions. Recently I heard through the unofficial technical grapevine that there have been some detection of electronic activity other than the normal space in the very high frequency monitoring channels of Harvard Beta Listening Program. These emissions seem to emanate from possible sources deep within the interstellar space. Note also, we treated this very recent information more credible than just a rumor. They could also emanate from and be detected from future visiting UFOs orbiting our sun or Earth. Perhaps they are out there. Number 24. We initially considered designing our version of UFO system or UFO configuration of those visiting UFOs. With Kelly Johnson's help, I thought we would attempt to configure a complete UFO vehicle, assuming we employed nuclear fusion for onboard power, control, and propulsion. We dropped that approach early on due primarily to Kelly's busy schedule and our team's lack of time. We did configure fusion power concept that could supply onboard power and control as well as vehicle propulsion. There we were quite creative, identifying an unsteady flow shock wave triggering solution to instantly elevate the hydrogen deuterium plasma to fusion temperature conditions. This unsteady flow shock wave was conceptually similar to the AEC approach, utilizing U-235 or PU-239 nuclear bomb fired into the deuterium plasma to cause fusion of deuterium plasma as in the atomic bomb, but we believed our shock wave concept to be far simpler. Number 26. The fundamental expression, that is, the laws of physics, force equal mass times acceleration, F equals MA, explains how our chemical rocket engine thrust causes liftoff and then accelerates the spacecraft up to orbit. The propellants are heavy fuel and oxidizers that burn, expand, and accelerate out through the rocket engine, producing thrust. The engine and the fuel tanks are heavy and require expensive fuel storage, even in staging, to reach other planets in our solar system. As we have suggested, nuclear fusion of deuterium is the only very light but comparable, offering infinite energy and power to allow for UFO movement within our solar system and perhaps about the galaxy. Instead of heavy rocket gases moving at thousands of feet per second, we can employ light particles moving at excessive electron speeds. These fused particles could be accelerated to velocities approaching infinity. Even though their mass was very light, the net result would be more than enough energy for tremendous propulsion thrust employing the lightest elements, hydrogen, in the universe. The exceedingly high temperature of 10 to the 8th degrees Kelvin or more would perhaps cause a glow that would appear multicolored lights to the Earth's observers. These lights have been observed beaming up as well as beaming down, suggesting the delta or the difference could be used to control the UFO when moving or hovering about the Earth. An interesting concept. Electromagnetic forces might well produce similar effects. This does not suggest or imply UFOs do not have more conventional bright lights as well. The above description is offered possibly to explain the glow usually associated with observed UFO movements about the Earth and while hovering. Number 28. We ruled out any attempt of investigating the control of gravity or UFO control by electromagnetic forces, however tempting both might appear. For UFO stability and control and for forces to move UFOs about within our solar system or for movement about in interstellar space. We felt these were well beyond the scope of your request, Mr. President. We left those investigations for other physicists and future UFO analysis. Number 29. UFOs visiting our solar system and then Earth after obtaining orbit in the ecliptic plane of our sun would require an extensive knowledge of the universe, especially if they came from positions outside our solar system consisting of Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, Pluto. These UFOs would need to know exactly where in our solar system and the Earth reside and move about in the universe or in our solar system. This further suggests that if these UFOs are real, they are truly advanced and highly scientific race of beings. Number 30. Advances over the last 50 years in nuclear fission and nuclear fusion reactions and development and deployment of nuclear weapons fired in anger might be of concern to visiting UFOs. After all, the human animal is, in the limit, a vicious being who needs to be controlled. We have evolved to where we are currently scientifically experimenting with the fundamentals of mass and energy conversion and the lighter particles of matter that make up the universe. We are on the verge of investigating and experimenting with the very forces that hold our solar system and universe together. Perhaps these UFOs, if real, are worried about us and routinely dropping by to check up on our scientific progress. Some other UFO investigators hold to that belief, but we considered that a bit far out for us, Mr. President. There are many ifs in our investigation of the UFO phenomena. There are also many credible events, sightings, witnesses that suggest UFOs need to be scientifically investigated. Perhaps, as Dr. McDonald proposed, the government should set up a special watch to openly investigate the future UFO sightings. We proposed such a program to the President based on our 9-month investigation. We suggested could be technically feasible should they have learned to control nuclear fusion for onboard power and propulsion. The physicists the world over believe that we're close to controlling nuclear fusion in the laboratory. However, employing nuclear fusion for propulsion in one of our spacecraft will take some added time for analysis, design, and development testing. Perhaps the UFOs have learned things we have yet to discover. Number 31. Based on Dr. McDonald's extensive investigation and our 9-month review of a great deal of the many UFO witnesses an extensive culling over many photographs and other sensor data. We could seriously suggest that these UFOs are extraterrestrial. Should they have learned to harness nuclear fusion in some form and a controlled nuclear fusion reaction, which the nuclear scientists of our world are on the very edge of harnessing, UFOs could possibly come from almost any place in the universe outside our solar system. We could not say that they come from some remote place in the universe, but they would be technically capable with controlled nuclear fusion employing deuterium for such travel. It must be kept in mind, the oceans of the Earth hold vast quantities of deuterium in its natural state, easily accessible for all and directly applicable through controlled nuclear fusion for UFO power and propulsion. Number 32. If these visiting UFOs are that scientifically advanced, they might well have learned to control gravity, or at least might have progressed to such an advanced state, whereby they have successfully harnessed electromagnetic forces to move themselves about the universe and within our solar system. They would probably view us as a rather primitive race, being by the standards and belief that we need watching. That ended the conclusions that were in this document to spell out what they had told the president. There's also a section called Recommendations to the President. Here's what that said. We strongly recommended that the president set up a special nominating committee and a standby scientific team consisting of a team chairman supported by a team of scientists and engineers. Both groups would be elected to serve for 1 year. The three-man nominating group should include the following members: Secretary of the Air Force, the head of the Atomic Energy Commission, a technical type of company vice president or university scientist appointed by the president. This team chairman should be elected to serve for a period of 2 years to add continuity to the operation. This committee of three would meet once every year with the President of the United States to name the 10-man team for the following year. The President, with the assistance of the nominating committee, should form a standby team of 10, consisting of scientists and system engineers, to be available for investigations of new UFO sightings, much like the teams that descend on commercial aircraft crashes. The team should include about the same makeup as our small special group, that is, a nuclear physicist, one or two, an astronomer, a meteorologist, radar and electronic specialist, systems engineer, aeronautical design engineer, National Photographic Interpretation Center or reconnaissance representative from the intelligence community, program manager acting as a chairman. These experts would serve without pay or salary, but their travel expenses with additional backup financial support for special outside experts and support services as required for the more detailed investigations would be paid for by the budget set up each year in advance and amendable as required after the review with the three-man commission listed in number two above. The special scientific team of 9 or 10 would report directly to the president at the end of every year, briefly summarize their investigations by a summary briefing and more detailed written report. If there were no worthy sightings covered that year, only the chairman, the program manager, would need to report to the president and explain why there were no sightings worth investigating. He may elect to bring other members of the president's meeting if he wished. Now, that was basically what they said. And the other interesting thing that they have here is a final statement. And this is kind of interesting. The final statement of what he calls my UFO book. So he's summing up the whole program, his working for the president, the report. The president did not activate any UFO investigating program or watch, as we suggested. I know, following our report to him, he tried to convince his Arizona friend, Dr. McDonald, that we would look into the UFO phenomena further and get back to him. Unfortunately, Dr. McDonald recognized the president's Washington stall and became extremely frustrated by the current delays and political infighting between agencies, especially over the recent years. We took 9 months to complete our investigation to the president, even though we worked in the investigation very hard. We had 3 long, detailed meetings over a 3-month period with Dr. McDonald, and several of our team followed up one-on-one with Dr. McDonald. We were very careful not to promise him anything that we insisted it was up to the president. We could only recommend. Dr. McDonald became extremely frustrated and perhaps highly emotional over the government's delays to formalize his often requested scientific investigation of the greatest scientific problem of our times, his favorite quote. I believe he looked to his friend, the president, for help and hoped the president might help elect to set up his proposed program to openly investigate the UFO phenomena. We privately came to the conclusion without any concurrence from us that our group was in favor of some form of yearly UFO investigating watch. No such program seemed to be forthcoming in spite of our detailed 9-month investigation. He believed it was specifically at the request of the president. One day without warning, Dr. McDonald quietly walked into the Arizona desert and shot himself to death. Our team's psychologist predicted he might do something drastic should he be convinced there would be no UFO investigation. Our psychologist suggested Dr. McDonald might even drive himself to a limit of frustration, convinced there existed an official UFO government cover-up. And that's how it ends. I'll make a final statement here. It seems, if you read this, that he is writing this in the 1990s, because most of these people as being dead by the time he does. So this is a mixture of the report to the president and him redrafting this thing in the 1990s and looking back on the program as he's writing this book. But like all the scientists that had died, the author of this report also died before he was able to finish the manuscript. The manuscript was picked up by his daughter, moved to a researcher, and then moved to me. So that's sort of the report. Hope it adds something to the situation. Clearly indicates, like Barack Obama is just saying, we know there are UFOs, and we don't have many very firm answers beyond that as to exactly what this phenomena is and where it's coming from, even though we may have hardware.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.